You please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
dearest Mother, saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Well, it feels like devotional chanting like that is the whole spiritual service. Everything else is just commentary. We're entering, of course, into the most holy season in all Christendom. I'd like to read from Matthew 26. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away, and the Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Then the chief priests and elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they schemed to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. "But not during the festival," they said, "or there may be a riot among the people." While Jesus was in Bethany in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of a very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will have with you, you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I deliver him over to you?" So they counted out for him 30 pieces of silver. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over. I'd like to speak this morning a time of testing. This story about Judas is a very interesting one, and certainly there is the human element of it, of an individual who is overcome by greed and as a result betrays the very purpose for which he had entered upon the spiritual path. Apparently he had become disillusioned through time, and this happens with devotees. At first, they are fired with enthusiasm, and they portray all of their, or rather project all of their dreams, all of their hopes and aspirations upon the spiritual master when they find him. But there are things that do not match up to their thought of what a spiritual master should be or what the path is all about. And so they began to think on these things and compare the master to what they thought was going to happen. And what they end up doing is find the master lacking in some way. And as a result of that, there is a betrayal within. Now, Mother described this 30 pieces of silver as the three different bodies we inhabit a material body, a physical body, and that is represented by the five senses. And within the brain, there are the recognizer of what the senses are. In reality, what we deal with this perception of reality on the outside, is what the brain sees. It imposes color, and it interprets the images. It begins to look at things that are common references for the brain. And as a result of that, we don't necessarily see the world as it is, but rather we have found ways to interpret this world in order to help us to survive, in order to make it easier for us. So in reality, we don't really see this objective world exactly as it is, but rather as the brain interprets through the five senses. Now, in the Hindu scriptures, there are the 15 different aspects. There are the object of the senses. There are those things that are sight, sound, touch, feeling, etc., olfactory, that all interact with the sense, power of sense itself. And then there are those aspects and elements within the brain that acknowledge this is really quite a sophisticated view of how the brain works and interprets what is seen through the senses. And physical science has borne this out through time. Now, rather than refer to the object of the senses, the 30 different pieces of silver refer to the 10 different qualities of the five senses, and that which is acknowledged in the brain, that occurs within the physical. There is also an astral aspect to this, and there is a causal aspect to this. So the physical, of course, is those things that we see in this physical realm. Then there is the astral. The astral is light and vibration. And so there is a more subtle way of seeing this world. If you meet an individual and you get a feeling, you get a sense of what this person is about that transcends the physical senses, then that is in the astral. It has to do with the psychic. And so there is that level of perception and then recognition within the brain. And so that is another level of 10 of the five senses of intuition along with the interpretation by the brain. And then there is the causal, there is the idea, which is much more subtle. And for those who have developed very deep concentration, such as yogis, there are a number of scientists who have cognized on this level. And they see things purely from a conceptual point of view. And it's much more subtle, but it's also much more expansive. And when you enter into it, much more powerful than either the other two realms. Each realm in succession becomes more expansive and more, more powerful, so that the astral is actually more expansive, more powerful than the physical. And the causal, likewise. Sometimes we use the words more subtle, and you can get the idea that it's somehow less substantial, less real, is what the material mind thinks of, because it hasn't attuned itself. But when you enter into these realms, it actually becomes more real than this physical realm does. And what you experience in the astral and in the causal is tremendous. It really is. But there is a realm that is beyond that, that transcends all of these and goes directly into the spiritual. Now, sometimes people have cognition of the astral, and it can appear to that individual like heaven. And so it is. It's beautiful, it's bright, it's pure, it's clean, it's much more attuned to spiritual vibration than this material realm is. But you're not there yet. And there are many people who get hung up, so to speak, upon the astral realm, upon the psychic, And that's where they leave it at. And then there are those who enter into the causal. And here you can get in touch with tremendous beings, tremendous creations that happen on that realm. Ramakrishna described that having transcended both the physical and the astral, he went into the causal realm. And there he met a tremendous being of light. And he asked that being if he would descend from the causal realm into the material realm in order to help him with the work that he had to do. That being agreed, and when Ramakrishna met, at that time his name was Narendra, and when he met Narendra, that was for him this tremendous being who had come from the causal realm, and he eventually became Swami Vivekananda. And so there are these different realms that are wonderful, they are beautiful, they are tremendous. But as Mother oftentimes said to us, don't go with middle management. Don't go with Mr. In-Between. Go directly to the President of the Universe and be satisfied only with that. So these are temptations that come along the way. These are the 30 pieces of silver. And you can sell out the Christ or going all the way to God consciousness for something less than that total. And you think, well, isn't it wonderful to enter into this astral realm? Or isn't it wonderful to enter into this causal realm? And you must be careful there because we want to go the entire way. We want to go directly to the President of the Universe. We want to go directly into the highest realm of consciousness. And then at that point, then you are safe to be able to explore and go into any of the realms of consciousness because you recognize what you have achieved is so far superior to anything in the lower realms, no matter how beautiful, no matter how wonderful. If you think of going into this astral heaven, and it's beautiful, it really is. The colors are vivid. It is so pleasant. It is so beautiful. There is so much creativity. There is so much ease that it is there. It is easy to believe that this is heaven. And in a sense, it is. It is a place where we go to when we have ended our lives here, and we typically go into an astral realm. And it is there that we get rest, we get reoriented towards deeper spiritual truths, because by and large, the astral realms are more closely attuned to light. Now, this is true, except for those who are very dedicated towards keeping themselves in the dark. And there they inhabit a kind of astral hell, where they will enter into that, and they don't want anything to do with the light. They want what they want, and they are more attuned to the darkness. They cannot rise into the higher light realms because vibrationally they are barred from it, even as a fish is required to swim in the sea and a man is required to walk upon the land and a bird can fly in the air by natural means. Even so, within these different realms, one may not enter into the higher realms unless they have earned that privilege. And so, for those who have attained Nirvikalpa Samadhi, those who have learned how to merge their consciousness in with God, may enter into the higher astral realms with Sri Yukteswar. So he said, and so you are able to do that. But if you have not come to that point in your evolution, then you may not ascend so high. It stands above the normal astral realms. It's a heaven for the astral beings. So these are wonderful, beautiful places, and yet they fall short of attaining completely to God. So Judas Iscariot is said to sell out to these 30 pieces of silver. Then we read on. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "What do you want us to make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" He replied, "Go to the city to a certain man and tell him, 'The teacher says, my appointed time is near. I'm going to celebrate the Passover with my disciples at your house.'" So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them and prepared the Passover. When evening came, Jesus was reclining at the table with the 12. And while they were eating, he said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me." They were very sad and began to say to him, one after another, "Surely you don't mean me, Lord." Jesus replied, "The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. The Son of Man will go just as it is written about him. But woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he had not been born." Then Judas, the one who would betray him, said, "Surely you don't mean me, Rabbi." Jesus answered, "You have said so." While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave to them and said, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from this fruit of the vine from now on until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." When they had sung a hymn, they went to the Mount of Olives. Jesus told them, "This very night you will fall away on account for me. For it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter replied, "Even if you all fall away on account of you, I will never." "Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "this very night before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. But Peter declared, "Even if I die with you, I will never disown you." And all the disciples said the same. Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee along with him. And he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "Father, if it is at all possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples, and he found them sleeping. "Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter, "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time, and he prayed, "My Father, is it not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it? May your will be done." When he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more, and he prayed a third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to his disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come, and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." And so 3 times, the Christ within goes deep into prayer and meditation upon God alone. And what are the disciples? The disciples are these different spinal centers that go all up and down the spine, and each one represents a different stage of consciousness. And they fall to sleep, and what does that mean? They become unconscious of the spirit, and they become very conscious of the body and the needs of the body, and there is a heaviness of sleep that falls over them. And so it is at this time that there are particular temptations. There are those things that come up inside of us that draw us away from the spiritual path, where before we had enthusiasm, we had faith, we had understanding. Suddenly we have doubt. Suddenly we don't understand. We fall into a spiritual amnesia. And as a result of that, this temptation comes over, and it comes in surprising ways. Peter says, "I will never betray you," and he means it. And he's been very faithful and wonderful servant. And yet, he too succumbs to this temptation. And he berates himself later on very greatly because of it. And yet, we come to understand that the Christ must go through this because, as Jesus is referring to himself, he's saying, "the Son of Man." Now, he has two ways of referring to himself. And one is as the Son of Man, and the other is as the Son of God. And for saying that he has the Son of God within him, he is to be killed and crucified according to the law. It is because the Son of Man still exists inside of him. The Son of Man are the first six chakras within you. And that represents separation from God, a limitation. And even in Christ's intelligence, in Christ's consciousness, there is still the sense of I that is separate from God. So that Jesus says, "I and my Father are one." The feeling of oneness is there, but there is also still this thin veil of separation between the I and thou. And so that must ultimately go as well. So these experiences are ordained. We must go through them. And there are different things that will come up during this time. Now, we all suffer temptations from the very beginning. It's not that temptations are new to us, but it is whatever is most predominant within the consciousness, whatever represents the most powerful pull away from God. There are those who initially get some spiritual experience going, a feeling the kundalini is awakened inside of them, and powerful experiences begin to happen, and they'll actually shut the door on it. It feels like too much. How can I do this? What will happen to me? And these kinds of fears and thoughts come up, and the door is closed. So we can close the door on spiritual experiences. Others will be raised up high, and we've seen examples of these where people are raised up high in divine consciousness. And yet, sex temptation will come, money temptation will come, there will be a sense of ego, a sense of power that come. Sometimes people divert their consciousness, they are raised up into a certain level of consciousness, and rather than totally surrendering to God, they begin to wander off to the left and to the right. They don't stay right on the razor's edge, as it is talked about in the Vedas. But rather, they begin to get fascinated with these astral realms or with these causal realms and all the different realms of power, all the different realms of individuals who reside in these. And so they get diverted in this way, and as a result of that, they lose their way. And we have seen examples where people have lost their way and they get lost into a darkness, and it's a very great darkness. And there are dangers in all of this. And people can become so lost. Elizabeth Hike talked about in her book, Initiation, where she is initiated into these higher mysteries. And one of the dangers of getting initiated early into these mysteries is that does the ego, has it prepared itself fully for this? And she had not experienced life with sex and with a partner and so on. And she meets somebody and she feels a great attraction for them. And as a result of that, those powerful high energies are directed down into the sex nerves, which completely fries her. And as a result of that, then she dies. And because of consequences of doing this, and she finds herself entombed in an inert mountain for a long, long time. Now, this would not happen necessarily with an ordinary person, but because she had been initiated into these greater consciousness, then this is something that happened for her. And so as we go up higher, the consequences of our betraying that Christ consciousness becomes greater and greater, where before somebody can go against God's laws and it's not as much difficulty, they still have to pay a price for what they do. But the price goes up. And so, as Jesus said, other sins can be forgiven you, but if you betray the Christ, that cannot be forgiven. Now, it's not that it can't be forgiven in the sense that it can't ever be worked out, but because you're dealing with higher consciousness and higher energy, then there are greater consequences for what you do. And because you are aware of more, you have more responsibility. One of the things that I realized as I entered into the causal realm was how powerful our thoughts are and how every thought has a creative power that goes out from it. And you are going along in your life and you think that you're keeping your mind on God pretty well and doing everything pretty well. And then suddenly the mind diverts off. And at first it doesn't seem like a big deal. But then as the point of differentiation begins to grow, your separation also grows with time. And pretty soon what seemed easy before, which was keeping your mind on God, feeling the presence of God, is suddenly gone. It's no longer there, and you are suffering now in this total separation from God. Papa Ram Dass used to not even allow himself to go to sleep because he didn't want to forget God at all. And this is how intense his desire was to reach God. It's the one thing that we can see amongst all of these great spiritual masters and beings was their great intensity on finding God and bending every thought, every bit of their will, all of themselves towards this end. We see it with Mother, we see it with Master, we see it with Papa and so many others. There are others who get into fairly uplifted states, as I say. Sometimes they belong to organizations, and the organization or the needs of the organization begin to take over. Mother felt that it was a shame that Swami Satchidananda had not been given time earlier in order to go through all the experiences that he'd been kept so busy with the needs of the organization that he had not gone through all of these experiences yet. I think that eventually that happened and that he got everything accordingly, but that there was times and it was his own particular karma. But just because somebody is high up in an organization doesn't mean that they've become realized. In fact, there are so many temptations that come from being a part of an organization. Sometimes we think of being in an ashram and it would be a spiritual environment and everything would be easy there. And it's true. It's a concentrated environment. There's many wonderful things about it. But as Master described, that he was put into a position of authority in Sri Yukteswar's ashram and that he was over the aspirants who were living at the ashram also. And at one point, a favorite came along of Sri Yukteswar. Sri Yukteswar demoted Master, and he put this other boy into his position. And you can imagine what that felt like for Master at the time. That'd be a tough thing on the ego, wouldn't it? And not only for him, but there were others who were grumbling because this other individual apparently was kind of lording it over everyone. And so they had to live with that for a period of time, and different ones were coming to Master and talking to them about what this other individual is doing and how difficult it was for them. And they were looking to Master for spiritual guidance, naturally, and not the other individual. And finally, because Sri Yukteswar was finding this all unfolding before him, and exactly as he had wanted it, he called in this young boy who had been a favorite of his, and scolded him and showed him how leadership is something that has to be earned and isn't just part of a position. And so He was demoted, and Master was once again promoted back into that. But you can imagine being in a situation like that, seeing other people promoted, seeing people whom you perhaps see as unworthy, as going ahead of you, and suddenly what your name is, what your position is, what color of clothes you have, all of these things have significance. And you can see where pride enters in. And it's very difficult when pride takes over. It makes for a great temptation. And you think, well, what I think is right, and what is going on here is wrong. And I've spoken to different people who have been connected with various organizations, and they're very indignant at the things that are going on. And they get pulled into it. They get pulled into it like a high drama. And if they're not careful, that can become the predominant theme in their lives. And it's who did what to who and who said what and all of these kinds of things. Now, clearly, Mother was pulled into the drama of the organization that Master had formed. And there were many things that happened, and she felt very disturbed because she saw what was happening to Master's teachings. They were being changed. His words were changed. The intention oftentimes was changed. And these are the things when lesser personalities get involved and they think they know as much or the Master did. And so they think they have to change all of these things that the Master did. And so changes happen. But Mother did an interesting thing. She really went directly to God. And she said, God, you must see to it that I am given what is necessary so that I can fight for my Master and his original teachings. And so Master, of course, and God, took her at her word and put her through all these experiences so that she had a direct pipeline to God. Now, no one else can have any say when you have your own direct perception from God. That comes directly from God to you. And so that can't be copyrighted by somebody else. That's something that comes directly to you. And so that trumped any kind of organizational copyrights because nobody could say anything about that other than oftentimes if anybody wrote to the organization about Mother or asked about her, oftentimes she was vilified in various ways. These are just the ways of the world and ways of human beings. So this is another form of temptation, and we have to be careful here because we look for and stand for the truth. And when we are involved in this world, we care about things that are said, what is done, especially when it comes to what the Master says and what the Master has done. But that ultimately what the Master, any spiritual Master, wants from us is to achieve our own God realization. And in order to do that, we must go all the way to God. Let us use everything that comes to us as a prompting to go deeper into God, not to get pulled into the drama of this world. Not to who said what to whom, but rather, Lord, this is disturbing to me. Reveal thyself, show me the truth of your own being, so that I can go beyond all of this human drama and into thy consciousness alone. And when we put our minds on this, even as Kate talked about last week, and that she was disturbed by something, and she put her mind on God and grew, and she was lifted up and given a tremendous experience in God. This is what we do. This is what we do. There were many who were disturbed by Mother's physical condition when she had strokes and the shingles and so on. And what I did at that time is I went home and I meditated upon God. I said, God, you must show me what is going on. And he did show me. And he showed me Mother in her light form. And it was so beautiful and so transcendent. and it removed any idea that mother was her physical body. You see, our material minds want to interpret everything from a material point of view. And so if something happens to the body, then of course we feel disturbed by that. And if it is our own body, it may be even more so. Reading here from Ramakrishna, and he's talking about here the inevitables. Everyone must reap the result of his past karma. One must admit that the influence of tendencies inherited from the past births and the result of the prarabdha karma, and one must remember that pleasure and pain are the characteristics of the embodied state. In the Kavakaka Chandi, it is written that Kalvir was sent to prison and a heavy stone placed on his head. Yet Kalir, who is born as the result of a boon from the Divine Mother of the universe. Thus pleasure and pain are inevitable when one accepts a body. Again, take the case of Srimanta, who was a great devotee, through his mother. Kulana was very much devoted to the Divine Mother, and there was no end to his troubles. He was almost beheaded. There is also the instance of the woodcutter, who is a great lover of the Divine Mother. She appeared before him and showed him much grace and love, but he had to continue his profession of woodcutting and earn his livelihood by that arduous work. Again, while Devaki, Krishna's mother, was in the prison, she had the vision of God himself endowed with four hands holding the mace, discus, conch shell, and lotus. But with all that, she could not get out of prison. So this is another temptation. We think that, well, because I'm a devotee of God, because I have put my attention on God, and that I'm seeking to serve him with everything that I have, no troubles will come to me. I will not get sick. I will not be in a prison. I will not have these kinds of things happen to me. And because karma is of a very complex weave, and we may have things that we are working out for our own individual karma, or even if we have resolved much or all of our own individual karma, we take on the karma of this world then. And things continue to happen to us. Illness, disease, difficulties, financial and otherwise, continue to happen. And as a result of that, we can lose faith if we have not attained full consciousness of God. It's as if we have made a deal with God. And we say, God, I will seek you, but you ease the way. You remove all of these burdens and these difficulties. I will have perfect health. I will have an easy life of it if I have given myself to you. But where do we get that idea from exactly? We look at many of the lives of the great spiritual masters, and they had great difficulties in their lives. Even Krishna, who was born a king, was born in a prison. He had to be taken away from his own mother, or he would have been killed instantly. And as he grew up as a baby and through childhood, there were assassins that were constantly being sent to kill him. There were so many dangers that surrounded him on the left and the right and in the center that he couldn't escape them. He did overcome them. He overcame all of them, but he did not necessarily have an easy time of it. And so we look at the lives of the great ones. We see Rama and all the difficulties that he went through, where he was to be crowned a king in a material sense. And in the last moment, that was snatched away from him. And not only was he not crowned a king, but he was banished from the kingdom, and he was told to leave without hardly any clothing, just some skins that he was given to wear. And he was to be a wandering mendicant, getting food where he could and as he could, and so on, a very difficult life. And he was to do that for 14 years until he was able to return. And he had so many troubles and difficulties even during that time, where his wife was kidnapped and he had to fight an entire war. We look at the life of Jesus and the different things that he went through. Now, it's not that everything is terrible and horrible. Not at all. Because each one of these individuals also had wonderful times of it. But we should not be into thinking that just because I have dedicated myself to God, nothing untoward will happen toward me. Things happen. Things come to you. And the promise isn't that you will have a perfectly easy life of it. But by keeping your mind upon God, you will be given the strength to endure whatever is given to you. And by the grace of God, you will be lifted up and you will transcend any experience that you are made to go through. And so this is the promise. You are given the power and the strength and the uplifting power to get through it all. Now that doesn't mean while you're going through it, you don't have a tough time of it. I have a statue that someone gave to me of Shiva dancing in this flame of fire that's circling all around him. And I keep it with me because it reminds me of what my life has been like for these past many years. And I have a flame that burns inside of me that's terrific, I can tell you. And it burns most all of the time. And so this is just something that God has given to me. And so I must accept it, you see. And I see His grace, I see His hand in it at all times. But it's not easy on a physical level. Now, I don't tell you this for any sympathy or anything, just so that you understand that when you go with God, it's not always an easy thing that you go through. And yet, that comes as a temptation too. You know, Mother used to talk about, well, you go through these experiences and it's a crucifixion and you die and it's painful and it's difficult and there's no respite. Now, who wants to sign up? And you think, who in the world would sign up for such a thing? Or in Christendom, you go into a church, you go into a temple, and what you see right front and center in the Catholic Church, at least, you see this cross, and you see a crucified Christ upon it with a crown of thorns, and he's in pretty tough shape. He's got nails through his hands. And what does Jesus say? He says, come, follow me. Now, is this insanity, or is there a deep, deep message embedded in all of this? And of course, there is a very deep message in it. And that is, you follow me all the way into Christ consciousness and even beyond, into total God union. But what you can expect along the way are these 14 stations of the cross, this crucifixion. Now, it is said that Jesus died for all mankind's sins. So why should you have to go through anything? And yet we see people who accept Jesus as their Lord and their Savior. We look at the lives of the great saints. And who is it who does not have to suffer temptation? Who is it who does not have to go through difficulty? No one. Everyone has to go through these things, and many of the saints go through worse than what the ordinary individual goes through. Now, when we look from the outside, we think, I could never do such a thing. I could never live such a life as Saint Francis or any of these other great saints. But how is it that they would do it? If they were looking from the outside, they might very well think the very same thing. But there is a grace that comes to you when you go through these experiences that give you the strength. For those women who have had children, it's one of those things, it's a tradition, I think, a baptism by fire, but you're told of all the worst births that every mother have ever had to go through before you give birth to your child. And it makes you think twice about whether that's something you want to do or can do. And yet, when the time comes, as difficult as it can be, something sustains you through it all. And you think of times when you've gone through different difficulties in your life, and you think, how did I do it? How did I do it? But grace was there to sustain you. And it's a demand and supply. When you demand it, the supply comes. And if you're standing on the outside, and you think, I don't have that kind of supply. Well, you may not in that moment because you don't have the demand. But if you did have the demand, the supply will be there. Now, where individuals get into trouble is when they close themselves off to God. That too is a temptation. I didn't expect this. I didn't want this. I'm feeling sorry for myself now. I'm mad with God for what he's doing to me and how he's running his universe, and I close myself off to God. I shut the door. And as a result of that, grace cannot flow because God will not go against your own free will. But we have done it to ourselves. And then, of course, we go around complaining to everyone that God has closed himself off from us and that we can't feel him, when the very fact is we have done it. And so, by keeping the door open, grace flows to you, strength flows to you, sustenance flows to you, everything that you need comes to you. When Jesus goes into the garden, and he's human, he says, I don't want this. I know what's coming. Please, let this cup pass from me. But then he turns around and he knows the divine will is what he really wants to follow. So he has that human inclination, I really don't want this to happen. But ultimately, not my will, but thy will be done. And as God showed me, that has come full circle from Adam and Eve in the story of, the symbolic story of humankind's evolution, going into human consciousness and eventually coming back to divine consciousness, that Adam and Eve made the decision to go deliberately against God's will. God warned them, intuition told them, don't do this. But they wanted what they wanted, and they chose to do it anyway. And you see the evolution of man through all of the stories in the scriptures. What have all these stories have been combined and put into the Biblica, into the Bible. And these stories tell the evolution of mankind. And you see they're wonderful saints. And some of those saints, some of those realized masters go all the way. But many fall short of the goal. And they run into difficulties because of it. And so there is start and stop and start and stop. But the Christ story is that full circle come back around. And through his own evolution of consciousness, he comes to that moment in the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but thy will be done. That is the crowning achievement, which takes us all the way into God consciousness. So will temptation be there? Absolutely, yes. Not because there is a sadistic God who sets out to trip you up. You are simply facing yourself. You are facing those thoughts, those actions, those words that you projected out from yourself in this going out from God. And as a result of that, you must face them. So everything that you face in terms of a temptation, the reason it's a temptation is because it strikes at some chord inside of you that resonates with that. Otherwise, it would be a nothing. And we face many things in this life that are a nothing to us. But to somebody else, that is the greatest temptation that they could have. I can walk by any bar or any place that serves alcohol, and by and large, I'm just repulsed by the whole thing. Somebody else can really have a battle royal on their hands, just getting past that moment of wanting to take a drink. And so what's difficult for one person is easy for another. We cannot judge another by the temptations and the trials that come their way, not unless we've faced everything that we have to face in our upward journey towards God. We don't even know what lies in residence deep in the recesses of our own unconscious mind until we have to face it. And until we have gone all the way to God, as Mother says, go all over the top, we don't know what's there. So we cannot judge another individual and what they have to face. We cannot know what that temptation is like for them. And once having faced those things yourself, by and large, what you come away with are two things. And one is compassion, because you understand how strong the pull can be. And if you give in to it, how much that just gives power to it, and it grows more and more and more. The other thing that you come away with is absolute clarity. You cannot give an inch. You cannot give anything to that temptation. And if you do, you have been sentenced into a very long road through perdition and through hell, I can tell you. And you have to climb your way all the way back out. And you learn wisdom of discrimination in this way, because you realize you can't play with things. You can't give anything to any temptation that comes along. And if you think that you can, then you're just fooling yourself. So we have to be absolutely pure in our purpose. We have to be absolutely focused upon God if we are to achieve the final consummation in God consciousness. There is no exceptions to this. Now, what is much easier than the path of the yoni is the path of the bhakti. And the bhakti cultivates that love and positive attraction for God. But we must also embody the wisdom of the yoni, in the sense that we're willing to cut out whatever it is that distracts us from God. If it pulls your mind away from being in oneness with God, then it must be cut out. And as Jesus very graphically and picturesquely says, if your eye offend you, then pluck it out. If your hand offends you, cut it off. Now, fortunately, we don't have to go through this life maimed. We can do that, but mentally, we must do it. We must do it. We must cut off those things. So this is something we must embed into our consciousness. There's no fooling around with this. And if we do, we will get tripped up. And if we get tripped up, there's a very big price to pay. And the higher you go up, the greater is the price. Now, this is not to make you afraid. This is just simply telling you the truth. So let us hearken to these examples through the scriptures. We can look at Judas and we can say, oh, what a fool. And Jesus even said as much as it would be better for him never to have been born. Can you imagine? And so let us take heed of these words, of these examples. Let us not get pulled into a field of separation. Let us not give an inch at all to those temptations. And if by chance we do, the moment we can think of recovery, we instantly get back on the right road again. Really, there's nothing that we have done that we cannot undo. To remember always, we are made fundamentally in the likeness and the image of God. and that cannot be changed, it cannot be destroyed. You cannot harm that. What you do is you put layer after layer of darkness and ignorance over the top of it that now must be uncovered. Why add one more layer to that? Why not get busy and start delving after, through those layers, getting rid of them and going straight for the pearl of great price? So let us become that focused, that determined, that clear in our intentions, and not waver a bit. We will save ourselves so much trouble, so many difficulties, so much pain. It may be difficult going straight to the goal, no doubt about it. It may even be painful. But it is far, far less than the difficulties we make for ourselves by wandering afield. So a time of temptation will come to all, but let us see to it that we transcend and go beyond it and discover the great beauty. If you think the astral realms are beautiful, if you think the causal realms are expansive, you are absolutely right. But God omnipresent is even more so, to the point that it makes those creations seem dull by comparison. And you will never, ever regret going all the way to God first. Put God and His kingdom of heaven first, and all these other things shall be added unto you. Now let us pray together. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious
presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy
feet and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy
perfection surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
The great light within you.
And may this anniversary of marking the arisen Christ within man be your story, be your awakening, be your arising.